Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Sean Flynn, author of The Kitty Who Rescued Me After I Rescued Him, a brief memoir of sorts. The Kitty recounts Flynn's budding and unexpected love affair with the titular feline. And it wasn't necessarily love, much less sharing a home at first sight. But Kitty's feelings changed over time, as did Flynn's, plus other cats entered the picture and entered Flynn's home. There's more to the story, of course, but we can't give away the whole thing, at least not now. The book represents Flynn's initial foray into writing, which he decided to pursue after spending more than 25 years in a market research career. And it's gone pretty well, including generating some major plaudits. We'll hear a bit more about how Kitty and Flynn did rescue each other, what prompted Flynn to document it in this book, and if the book and the reaction it's elicited thus far heralds a new career, maybe even a new life, when I speak with Sean Flynn in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll also speak with Claire Ray of Friends of Strays about the organization's multifaceted event August 19th to mark International Homeless Animals Day at the Flying Boat Brewing Company in St. Petersburg. Right now, though, let's get to Sean Flynn and his book, The Kitty Who Rescued Me After I Rescued Him, with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Sean Flynn on Talking Animals. Good morning, Sean.
How are you? Thanks for having me on your program.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us this morning on Talking Animals. Now, depending on the guest and what's brought us to a conversation on the show, I sometimes begin these interviews asking folks about what role animals played in their formative years. Sometimes it reflects a lifelong through line of loving animals. Sometimes they grew up without any animals and have reacted or overreact in some cases to that, and so on. So because the book title alone suggests an animal spurred something transformative in your life, particularly inclined to explore this part of history with you. So how prominent were animals in your childhood?
Well, I grew up having dogs in my life, but we really didn't have any family cats. Again, we had several family dogs. They were always a big part of our life. Parents, especially my mom, always made it a point to, teach us how to respect animals and, love animals, things like that. My sister brought home a cat when I was in high school once, but the cat was only really an outdoor cat and really didn't have a lot of contact with the cat. But, I've always loved animals, and I actually, several years back, I raised 5 baby skunks one summer when their mother had been killed in front of the house by a car. So, I've always loved animals. Certainly, when I met Kitty, he really, had a big impact on me. The impact he had on me was basically spiritual, and I've had a love of cats ever since I met Kitty.
In some ways, that comes through in your answer to my question about what kind of animals, if any, there were in your formative years, because you almost slighted dogs, like, well, there was dogs, but I didn't really have any cats at the time, except this one, the stray that my sister brought home. So it kind of reflects your strong pro-cat bias, I guess, which is not the worst thing in the world. What about between those points, though? You grew up, obviously, with dog and that one-off cat there in the early part of your life. What about when you left home, either for college or just otherwise strike out on your own? What was your view of animals then, and to what extent were you sharing your home with them?
Well, as I said, I've always loved animals. I haven't had a lot of pets in my life after I left my parents' house as a late teenager, although one summer, one of my roommates in college brought home a kitten, and the kitten hung out with us for a few months, and then at the end of the semester, he graduated, and I went on to live in another house, and one of our neighbors actually took that cat. And so the cat was taken care of, and, we didn't, dump it, as many people do. So, I haven't had a lot of experience with pet ownership until I met Kitty.
We'll circle back to that in a sec, but just because I think in some ways it plays sort of at least an important secondary role. We do know from the book that you spent a quarter century or thereabouts fully engaged in the corporate world, focused on market research. Tell me about that. What field are we talking about? What company? What kind of market research were you conducting?
Well, I worked for a variety of different companies, most recently in the insurance industry. So, I live here in Connecticut, And Connecticut was historically known, or Hartford anyway, was historically known as the insurance capital of the world. I moved up here from the Philadelphia area back in the mid-90s when I was offered a job to work for one of the insurance companies. And I've worked in and out of the insurance industry most of my adult life. But I have worked for other companies, worked for a company that provided services to the mailing industry. I've worked for consulting firms and doing customer satisfaction survey research and various market analysis, stuff like that.
The bulk of it was really within the insurance industry. That's the kind of research you were conducting is how those clients, how those customers were feeling about whatever that particular insurance company that you were employed by at that time, what their experience is like, how they were treated, that kind of thing?
Yeah, pretty much. Their thoughts about the products and things like that.
Sounds like probably some pretty consuming work. So was that among the reasons that there was a fairly long stretch of pet-free existence in your life till the fateful encounter with Kitty?
Pretty much. I didn't have a lot of extra free time. And as I know you know, Duncan, taking care of pets is certainly time-consuming. And, you really have to make it a point to make sure you're doing the right thing and taking care of them properly. I have a cat that was recently diagnosed with diabetes, and I have to give him an insulin shot every 12 hours. So obviously my schedule now kind of revolves around giving Gypsy his insulin shot twice a day. And I really can't miss it either. I can't come home late at night because, I'm out doing something. I have to make sure I'm here to give him a shot at 8 o'clock or, within 15 minutes of 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that is a big commitment because that, like you say, that cuts down on things you could do. And obviously, I guess travel is out unless you get somebody that's willing to take over giving those insulin shots.
Yes. I've actually taken Gypsy with me when I've gone away on weekends. And, I bring him in a cat carrier in the car. And I can give him his insulin shot. Now, my other cat, I can have, a neighbor pop in. Recently was out of town for a couple of days, and fortunately, one of our friends was able to come over and give Gypsy his insulin shot.
Well, that's quite a friend then, because that seems like, unless you're very comfortable with that, or Neil's generally, that seems like a larger thing to take on rather than just coming by and feeding the cat or cleaning out the litter box or whatever it might be otherwise. So set the scene for me. What was going on in your life when you met Kitty? So you're working in the insurance industry. You're pretty consumed with that, obviously. What else was going on personally? Just kind of give us a sense of what was happening in your world at the time that Kitty entered that world.
Sure. Well, I met Kitty when I moved to the house that I currently live in. I actually met him about two months before I moved into my home. I was walking around the backyard trying to, just get a feel for the property with the realtor, and this big, fluffy, pretty orange cat was hanging around. He came over and rubbed up against my leg, and he was real friendly. And I thought he was just a neighbor's cat, and, I didn't think much of it. Well, after looking at, numerous properties in my search for a home, I ended up moving into the house that I currently live in. I moved in on a Saturday morning, about 2 months after I looked at the property and evaluated the property. Moved in on a Saturday morning, and I got home from work that Monday night, and that same stray cat was sitting on the front step like he was waiting for me to get home.
Apparently he was.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The relationship that he and I developed happened over the period of several months. It wasn't something that was instantaneous. But, I started feeding him in the back porch. He was real friendly. I would be doing yard work in the backyard, and he would, hang out with me and come over and bump up against my leg or just lay down in the grass and watch me as I worked. And he was just really friendly. So I started, feeding him on the back porch with a bowl of water. And that fall when it started to get cold out, I put one of the swinging pet doors so that he could sleep in the garage. And he was in the garage every morning when I left for work. And, a couple months after that, he ended up moving inside with me.
At this point, it may go without saying that this cat was, I guess, some kind of stray, but clearly wasn't feral by the way he reacted to your overtures and hanging out with him and doing other stuff.
No, he was clearly someone's pet. I don't know if he was stray or had been abandoned. I really don't know his history. But I can make some guesses, but he was clearly someone's pet.
But he wasn't, as I recall, at least, he wasn't chipped or didn't have a collar that would indicate, hey, yeah, he belongs to the Smiths over three doors down or whatever.
Correct.
Before we carry on with the story here, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Sean Flynn, author of The Kitty Who Rescued Me After I Rescued Him, a brief memoir of sorts that largely reflects what the title suggests. If you'd like to ask Sean a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Okay, so you guys have had this kind of budding friendship or romance even maybe. So now he's not only coming through the door to hang out in the garage, but sounds like he's effectively moved in over time.
Yeah, it was the it was late November, early December after I had met him that summer that I was leaving for work one morning, and it was a very cold morning, and he looked up at me with those pretty green eyes, and he said, "Dude, come on, just let me in." So I looked back at him and I told him, "Sure, bud, yeah, you can live inside with me." And that Saturday, I took him to the groomer and got all the fleas and ticks taken off him, and got him his shots, and had some other tests conducted to make sure he was healthy. And I brought him home that Saturday afternoon, and he became an indoor cat at that point.
And it's interesting, as you're describing this, it seems like weather and just the shifting seasons there in Connecticut played at least some role in advancing this friendship along. I mean, it may have advanced similarly otherwise, but it does sound, as you're recounting this, that there was that cold day, and like, hey, what about this? And then the cold weather just generally was starting to shift that time of the year. And that really seemed to kind of spur things to get him to kind of come in more and hang out more. And then obviously, once that sort of had crossed a line, then you took him and got him all fixed up and made him kind of an official resident.
Yeah, well, I think probably the cat food had something to do with it as well. The I told you that I was feeding him on the back porch, and then when I installed the two-way swinging pet door, he started sleeping in the garage at night. And I had a big pillow in a corner for him, and next to a bowl of food and water. So I'm sure having access to that food, unlimited access to food, that was certainly something that helped to get him to make sure that he came in the garage because he wanted something to eat.
No, I'm sure it was a key selling point, but from the sounds of Kitty, before you guys kind of made it more official, and just the way you characterized him as clearly had been someone else's pet previously, sounds like a cat that could have gone somewhere else, may have been somewhere else to get food. So it wasn't just probably that you were offering food. It seemed like there must have been something else that he recognized about you, or just the setup there at the house or whatever. He thought, well, I kind of rove around, but this right now, this seems like my best move here.
I would say Kitty adopted me.
Yeah, very. Yeah, it sounds like he had a clear strategy ultimately. It wasn't clear at first. So as we touched on at the beginning of this conversation, the book chronicles some pretty transformative elements in at least two lives. I mean, his and yours, and it's right there in the title, really. So, but I'd like to look a little bit at cause and effect. When you had started plotting kind of an escape strategy from market research, when did that happen relative to when you met and got involved with and hooked on maybe even Kitty? I mean, were you already writing when Kitty entered the picture? Put this in a bit more of a timeline for us, if you could.
Well, I've written business documents. I've, my whole career, research reports, things like that. I've never actually written a book like The Kitty. But a couple of years ago, I kind of had an emotional experience in my life, and I wanted to document my thoughts and my feelings. And I started writing, kept writing and kept writing, and it was like when Forrest Gump started running and just kept running. I kept writing and just kept writing, and I didn't plan on writing a book or trying to publish a book. I was writing for myself. I wanted to document my feelings, my emotions, my experiences, and I shared it with some of my family, close family and close friends, and they were really touched by what I wrote. And probably last summer, late summer, early fall, I decided to see about pursuing the possibility of getting it published. So I started to look into that. I started making some changes and modifications to it. Started to get people to, edit the document for me, and started to break it up into chapters and, make a story that could be consumed by the general public.
How did it proceed from there?
Well, I originally published it late last year, but since this is my first book and I don't have a lot of experience, but I've been learning very quickly about the publishing industry and book promotions, things like that.
Yeah.
I actually republished it this past April. I used a different printing company. I created a new cover design. I selected a new trim size, the 5.5 by 8.25 trim size, and I also made some other changes to it that really helps to make it more of a book. Like when I originally published it, I didn't have the title or the my author name on the spine, and I was told that if you wanted to get this book into libraries or bookstores, you needed to have that information on the spine. So that's one of the reasons why I, changed the cover and republished it. I also had gotten some reviews, some really good reviews, since I initially published it, so I wanted to include some of those on the back cover.
So a couple things. First of all, for those of us not as steeped in publishing as you've become, when you refer to trim size, what does that mean?
That's actually the physical properties of the book.
Okay, so the dimension of the book itself.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Now, the thing that's kind of interesting about this, I think, is that you, not once apparently, but twice, self-published this book, and I don't want to travel too far from a field from animals with a discourse on publishing, but a lot of animal people have great stories to tell, and they may benefit from hearing a bit about how self-publishing works. So, basically, it sounds like you've made yourself an expert, and how common or uncommon, first of all, is it to self-publish twice? The same book, obviously.
I can't comment on that. I don't know how many people do it, but I do understand that it is something that's commonly done, and I could have published it as a second edition, but it really wasn't. It was the same exact story, just with a different cover picture and a different layout, and as I mentioned previously, a different trim size. So I just indicated on the copyright page that it had been originally published in late 2016, and I included the ISBN number so that people would know what or how the book was originally published.
And Sean, before you took these steps, especially the initial self-publishing step, did you submit it to publishing houses and pursue a more conventional book deal publishing arrangement?
No, I did not, because my understanding at the time was that it could have potentially taken years. I would have had to reach out to an agent. Many traditional publishers obviously go through agents, and I my understanding was that it would have taken years, and I kind of wanted to, get it out there when I did.
I got you. So it was less like, hey, I don't know that this is a book in the conventional sense, than, hey, I finally got this thing done. I like the looks of it. I like the story that's in my hands. I just want to get it out there as fast as possible. So self-publishing is the most direct path to do so.
Well, self-publishing is pretty common nowadays.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, the internet and these basically, these various self-publishing websites that are available. I mean, it's actually pretty common.
And again, it seems like it's at least round two. It's worked out pretty well, both in terms of some nice reviews and stuff. But tell us a little bit about this International Book Award.
Oh yeah, that's something we're very excited about. As you had indicated we were selected as an award-winning finalist in the Animals, Pets, and Narrative Nonfiction category of the 2017 International Book Awards. And essentially what that means is I came in second place. So I didn't win the award, but I came in second place, and they liked the story so much that they thought it deserved, an honorable mention.
That's pretty darn good for your first time officially, at least, I guess, out of the gate. So congratulations on that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's come back to what kind of story is actually in this book that's gotten this kind of acclaim. We don't want to do a complete spoiler alert, or hopefully you don't need one, but tell us kind of, at least in broad strokes, pick up where we left off. So Kitty, you had met Kitty, you had made that in and outdoors, so he would come in and hang out, especially on colder days, and then pretty soon he became an official resident, and you looked after him in that way. So to kind of take us through at least just the broad con of the story in terms of at least some of the rescue in one direction or another.
Sure. Well, obviously, the title of the book, The Kitty Who Rescued Me After I Rescued Him, focuses on him and how he helped me, the positive impact he had on me, and how having him in my life helped me through a difficult time. But the story also includes, details about other cats that I rescued after I, first rescued Kitty. Having him in my life really helped me to, kind of get a soft spot in my heart for abandoned and stray cats, and I ended up rescuing several cats, after I rescued Kitty. So I rescued Squeakers and Gypsy and Girlene, and you read all about them in the book. But they're my kitty family, and I love them all, and I'm very fortunate to have all my cats in my life.
Well, one of the reasons why I did start some of these interviews the way I did, and why I kind of outlined the way I wanted to with you, is that there's variations, of course, but two main storylines I do find with people who are on the show for whatever reason they are on the show is they're people who were animal nuts from the get-go, and when they were little kids, they were the ones that tended to the sick or injured animals in the neighborhood, and or they just had a lot of animals around the house. And, another sort of fairly common storyline is people who, for one reason or another, didn't grow up really with any pets to speak of, and later on making up for lost time. So I think you're sort of somewhere between those two storylines, because as you noted, you did have dogs in the house, and there was that one brief encounter with the cat, but now you seem like you're a complete cat guy.
Yeah, I got to say, Duncan, Kitty certainly changed my life. As I mentioned, the impact he had on me was spiritual. And
how so? Maybe say a little bit more about that.
Well, he changed my life. I mean, the impact he had on me, the love that I developed for him and other cats, and wanting to help other cats, just has been huge. I currently, as a result of having had Kitty in my life, I have all these other cats in my life, but I also volunteer with my local cat rescue group, Enfield Community Cat Project, and we've done a lot of good for cats in the community, stray, abandoned, and even feral cats in the community.
Yeah, that area, Connecticut generally, but maybe certain parts in particular, seem at the forefront of some of the stuff that's really good work that's being done with community cats, it seems.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, we do tons of stuff. I mean, we trap, last I heard, the number was about 75 kittens that were born of feral cats just this year, this spring/summer time frame. That's when a lot of the feral cats have kittens, and we collected up a whole bunch of cats that are currently in foster care and are being adopted out. So those are cats, if we hadn't have been doing that, those are cats that would end up, growing up having a litters of their own, and our town would be overrun with feral cats.
And given your work with in that way, beyond just the work in your own home, I want to read an email that came in. We were earlier talking about Kitty and your first encounters with Kitty, and sort of realizing on the one hand that he was clearly had been someone's pet, but there was no chip, no collar. So one of our listeners wrote in saying, "It's so important to microchip your animal. I found a beautiful lynx, Point Siamese cat, at the park several months ago. I took her to a vet. She was already spayed, but no chip. How heartbreaking for the family that lost her." So just another example of if those cats or dogs aren't chipped and something, they get away or something happens, sometimes people are very hard-pressed to get them back to their families.
Sure. Well, actually, one of the cats I rescued, my cat I named a Gypsy, he actually did have a microchip. The first time I took him to a vet, the vet scanned him and found out he was chipped, and they were able to contact the owner, but the owner really wasn't interested in taking Gypsy back. And unfortunately, you know, many cats are dumped by their owners when their owners move. It's an absolute tragedy. I think it's a tragic event. So
yeah, I just heard a story like that last night. There was a cat that people ended up with, and they were trying to do the right thing. A track was clearly had been someone's pet, so they did track down the person. And exactly what you just described, these people had moved, and they thought the mover was somehow going to look after the cat or take care of it. And it's like, really? I mean, anyway, so I don't need to get too worked up on that. By the way, let me read another text message that just came in. It says simply, men who like cats are the best, with a big exclamation mark. So there you go. But so it does sound like Kitty and all who have followed really have been indeed transformational. Let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals. My guest is Sean Flynn, who's written a book called The Kitty Who Rescued Me After I Rescued Him. And we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Apart from getting more involved with cats in the community, what important lessons have Kitty in particular, but then the others that followed, Squeakers and Gypsy, etc., what have they taught you?
They've certainly helped me to learn how to love unconditionally. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. I mean,
well, that's huge for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, certainly other things in your life are important as well, but I think they've helped me to learn the value of relationships. That relationships are huge, and you have to, you can't discount relationships. Relationships are something that need to be nurtured every day.
And so how broadly have you then applied these lessons, like with human relations in your life, for example? What kind of impact has these kind of revelations from the cats had?
Well, it's helped me to, focus on my girlfriend, Carrie, who we live together, and we have a relationship, and like all couples, you know, we don't always see eye to eye on everything, but you know, that's not as important as our relationship. So, you know, having, you know, Kitty and Squeakers and Gypsy and all my other cats, they've helped me to learn that the value of relationships is huge, and those things, you know, need to be applied to other people as well. Not just your pets, but other people.
Well, that's when some great learning really is taking place at the hands of an animal. Let's get a caller or two involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Sean Flynn.
Hey, good morning. My name's Joey. I'm from Puerto Rico. And I just, a couple things as I'm listening to this morning, and I definitely agree. I have three inside cats and an outside cat. And those cats, really gotten me through some tough times. I mean, I lost my wife a couple of years ago to cancer. The cats knew it. They stayed around her. When I go outside and contemplate a little bit, they always, you know, want to be right there with me. They're my little soulmates, I'll tell you. And the other thing is, I heard you just as I got in the car. I've heard you saying about the diabetic cats. And I have one Maine Coon inside she's a diabetic. And those cats know that they feel better when they get the shot. Gracie, after probably the third day, and she's been on insulin now for probably 3 or 4 years, never, ever, ever gave me a fight. She just knows before she starts eating her breakfast or dinner that she stands there by the bowl and waits for me to give her the shot. She's perfectly healthy except for the blood sugar, and she's doing fine.
Wow, well, that's cool, and it's another measure of how smart animals can be and how they just plug into stuff. And obviously yours there said, hey, this thing equals me feeling better, so instead of running or freaking out or whatever, I'm just going to wait patiently here because I know it's shot time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they know. They You know, I just believe not only cats, but all animals have that sixth sense of determine and feel things when we don't think they have feelings and emotions. And they really do.
For sure. That's great. Well, thank you very much for calling in. And
have a great morning.
Bye-bye. All right. Thank you. You too.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Billy.
So, Sean, actually, let me just read another text message that says, I read The Kitty, and I'm so impressed that a man wrote this. Love, love, love it. So that's
great to hear.
Yeah. So,
well, we've been getting some real good feedback about the book. I currently have a 4.9 out of 5 star average rating on Amazon, and we've gotten some real good reviews as well. We received a reader's favorite 5-star review. So we're real happy and proud of that as well.
Yeah, and again, it seems like from backing in almost in a way to that kind of writing. I mean, you've noted that you did, of course, other kinds of writing over the course of your career. And is that career, have you already kind of shifted out of that? Or do you still have kind of one foot in the market research side of things and one foot in the budding writing career?
Well, I'm currently focusing on my book, promoting my book. But, you know, I haven't fully given up the idea of going back to corporate America and working in market research. I might at some point, but for the moment, I want to focus on, you know, promoting my book and seeing what happens with that. You know, one of the reasons I wrote this book, or one of the things that prompted me to get it published was a little over a year ago, I was in Petco getting cat food, and I was walking by the periodicals display, and I saw a book with a picture of a cat on it that looked very similar to mine, to Kitty. And I went over, picked it up, sized the book up, looked at the front cover, looked at the back cover, opened it up, read the first two or three pages, and thought to myself, this is my story exactly. And the name of that book was A Street Cat Named Bob. So I ended up buying it, took it home, read it cover to cover, and, I felt like, oh my God, you know, other people had the same experiences that I've had with cats.
It's a fairly universal story, and I think that probably accounts for the response you've gotten and the plaudits, and even the people that today, that just now, the text message from someone who's read the book and obviously liked the book, but it was impressed that a man wrote it. So yeah, there's a lot of chords that I think are being struck by this book. So we're in our sort of final moments here, Sean. What do you anticipate, or have you already even have an idea or two kind of percolating in your head, or maybe even beyond that, for what another book down the road? Once you're, I know you're focused on promoting this one, but sounds like the bug may have bitten a little bit as far as this kind of writing and just the way things have gone with the self-publishing and the response, etc.
Oh, I absolutely do. I have a ton of great stories about my cat or about my cats. And as since you read the book, Duncan, I have Squeakers, I have Gypsy, I have a Girlene. I mean, her story is a great story. A feral cat crawled into my garage 8 years ago when I was cutting the grass one day. I had the garage door open and had 3 kittens, and she's the surviving kitten. I mean, her story is just absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, I have a ton of great stories in my head about my cats, and, the game plan is to continue writing and then promoting my cat book.
So the next book, it sounds like, will be not unlike The Kitty in that it'll be about one or more of the cats that you live with and have that kind of life with.
Very well could be, absolutely. Yeah. That's what I have in mind at the moment, sure.
Well, and also I think it's notable to a feral cat, or even sort of semi-feral, I guess maybe in Girlene's case, when forging a relationship with that, like that's pet-like. I mean, that's a pretty interesting story by itself.
Well, Girlene has known me since, her first day of life, and while her mother was a feral cat, she's certainly not feral. So it's actually funny, though. Her coat feels differently from my other cats' coats. Their coats are, like, softer and fluffier, and hers is almost coarse, like you would think a wild animal's would be.
Even though she's lived with you for some years now?
Absolutely. But
interesting.
Yeah, that's... that's, I mean, obviously she inherited her coat from her mother.
Yeah, but you'd think over time with certain kind of diet and some other stuff that maybe that coat would change, but that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sean, we have just about reached the end of our time. We've been speaking with Sean Flynn, the author of The Kitty Who Rescued Me After I Rescued Him, active on Facebook. You can just track him down. Sean, it's S-H-A-W-N. Flynn. And Sean, thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and good luck with the continued rollout, I guess, of the book and the nice response that it's been generating along the way.
Hey, thank you, Duncan. Thanks for having me on Talking Animals today.
All right. Thank you. Take care now.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye now. In a few moments, I'll speak with Claire Ray about the Friends of Strays festivities plan for International Homeless Animals Day a little over 2 weeks from now on August 19th. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with a classic piece from a comedian turned talk show host. In this case, I'm referring to Ellen DeGeneres and a piece she did many moons ago. Just felt like we should do a cat-related piece, don't you think? So this is Cat in Heat by Ellen DeGeneres in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I personally like cats more than dogs. How many people by round of applause like cats more than dogs? Me too. How many people like dogs more than cats? Me too. I have a cat that is in heat right now. You ever had a cat in heat? They just change on you. She is my kitten, my adorable little pet that now is a hooker. She's wearing makeup. I went into the bathroom the other night. She's putting on mascara. Tonight won't be just any. La la. Mm-hmm. She didn't know the whole song. Mm-hmm. She just knew some of the words. Mm-hmm. She's an indoor cat, but male cats know she's in there somehow. They're just all around the house, and somehow she's sneaking out because the other morning I found a stamp on her paw. I wouldn't have noticed. I just bought this new black light and she passed right under it. Oh, hey! What is that? So these male cats, they are sneaky. They're trying to get in for... They're just... The other day, one of them disguised himself as a UPS man. Yeah, the truck, the packages, everything. I said, I'm not falling for that, you know. The suit was just hanging off of him, just... Little name tag said Fluffy. Oh, right. I will not sign here. Scoot. Driving off all mad in that big truck. Stripping the gears. They don't know how to drive. Cats. Came back the next day as a cable repairman. Same outfit. Little butt crack hanging out this time. That's... So he fooled me. I let him in. I caught on. But he got Nickelodeon for free. He hooked that up somehow. So good to see all the old shows. Boy, when cats mate, they just mate. They don't care where they are, what time it is, how loud they are, who they're with. Wouldn't that be great? That is. But then you compare it to, like, I was watching the Discovery Channel, and penguins are monogamous for life. Penguins mate for life, which doesn't really surprise me that much. They all look exactly alike. It's not like they're going to meet a better-looking penguin someday. Even if they are cheating, how do you know? I think that's me he's with. Sandra, doesn't that look like me?
That was Ellen DeGeneres with a piece called Cat in Heat, taken from her CD, Taste This. Now on to my conversation with Claire Ray of Friends of Strays. Indeed, I'd like to welcome Claire back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
First, let's talk a little bit about Friends of Strays. I mean, it's inconceivable probably to think that someone may not have paid strict attention the last time we talked about Friends of Strays. But just in case, and perhaps there's other people listening, let's outline what Friends of Strays is and what it does.
Well, we're a no-kill animal shelter who we take care of the homeless animals in Tampa Bay, help get them healthy, spayed, neutered, microchipped, and adopted.
And you guys have been around quite some time, too.
Yes, we were founded in 1978, and our shelter has actually been here since the early 80s.
That's kind of a great history to acknowledge, I think.
We like to think so.
To do all those various things, there's events, there's fundraisers, there's other kinds of things. So one of the events, I guess, got multiple agendas, including holiday of sorts, I guess it recognizes. So tell us a little bit about what's coming up on August 19th and what it's about.
Well, there's so much going on at this event. It is International Homeless Animals Day, and Mayor Kreisman will be out to present a proclamation and do a ribbon cutting for the grand opening of Flying Boat Brewing Company, which is the location. We're going to have donations from the Pet Law Center and Flying Boat, $1 each for every IPA sold. There will be live music and food trucks, a bubble release in honor of all the homeless animals. That's also sponsored by the Pet Law Center. And the big thing that we're really hoping will be a success is a microchip clinic. And that will be in conjunction with 24 Pet Watch for the first 50 pets that come in. And we're really hoping it'll make an impact to help against the loss of animals and homeless animals.
For sure. And Claire, we just were with our previous guest, Sean Flynn, we were talking a little bit about the importance of microchipping and pets that go astray for one reason or another, and people try to find, it's clearly a pet that did have a home and does have owners, and how without that chip, sometimes people are very hard-pressed to find where they belong, and so it's just so critical in so many ways. And we will just say that for people who come out to this event, the first 50 pets could not get a better deal on getting their pet microchip.
Absolutely.
So that's really cool. Tell us a little bit about International Homeless Animals Day to begin with. I mean, it's hard for me to keep track of all the holidays or notable days or whatever, and I'm not sure sometimes who proclaims them, but I try to roll along with as many as I can. But what's the story of the history, et cetera, of this one?
Well, this is actually something that was began by ISAR, which is the International Society for Animal Rights.
Okay.
So it is an international event. There are events taking place on that day all across the country and the world, which you can find on their website. You can also find more information about our event on our website and our Facebook.
So why don't we tell people, so we got friendsofstrays.org, I believe, is the...
.com.
Oh, is it? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I think on your signature you have .org, so that's weird. Okay.
My email address is .org.
Wow, okay, well that's where it does get confusing. Okay, so it's friendsofstrays.com,
yeah.
And then also, of course, I imagine this event, among other things, is presented on the Facebook page.
On Facebook, which is Friends of Strays Animal Shelter on Facebook.
Okay, so people can just search for Friends of Strays or Friends of Strays Animal Shelter,
yeah,
and get taken right to the page. So that's cool, and it sounds like it's going to be a great afternoon and lots going on. There was something else. Did we talk about, I guess we did talk about the T-shirt screen printing.
Oh, yes, I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
Linus Hops will be out doing live T-shirt screening. They have some really wonderful kitty-inspired designs.
If you're a cat person, this is the day for you to take your cat and or just enjoy various cat things, including cat T-shirts.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. And dogs. We welcome dogs.
Yeah, that's true. And again, we should note that the Flying Boat Brewing Company, where this is all taking place on the 19th, is at 1776 11th Avenue North in St. Petersburg. So,
yes.
And again, happening from 2 to 6 p.m.
We're very grateful to them for helping get all this put together.
Yeah, it's great to have kind of a nice base for all those operations all happening kind of simultaneously, so that's really cool. So, Claire, well, thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals and filling us in on this big, cool event.
Thank you so much for letting me be here.
For sure. All right, thanks.
All right.
All right, coming up at 11 o'clock on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Midpoint with Nola Lele. Then at 1 p.m., Craig Kopp and John Gilmore preside over executive session. Meanwhile, on this show, is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a pair of tickets to see Loudon Rainwhite III. They got to plan ahead a little bit for this. March 29th at the Murray Theater at Ruth Eckert Hall. So we're going to get into that Name That Animal Tune presently, in fact. Name That Animal Tune is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. There'll be a prize, again, the tickets to see Loudon Rainwright, March 29th at the Murray Theater at Ruth Eckert Hall. To the first person who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. And this was played live at a nearby, let's say, arena just within the last 3 weeks, if that's a nice clue. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
Toes. When you're on the street, you got to be able to pick out the easy meat with your eyes closed. Then moving silently downwind and out of sight, you got to strike when the moment is right without thinking.
All right, looks like a few people can name that animal. In fact, we might even try to do the old school thing that I used to do a lot and put some of these guesses on the air live. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're on the air live. Can you name that animal tune?
I think that's dog.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. What is your first name, sir?
My name is Bo.
Bo? Okay, cool. I'm going to come back and get your information, get you set up. Can you go see Loudon Rainwright on March 29th? I know it's kind of planning ahead, but can you do that?
Absolutely. I think that gives me enough time to plan for it.
I should think so. Okay, cool. Thanks. I'm going to put you back on hold and get your information as soon as we wrap up here on Talking Animals. Thanks again. Congratulations. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Lori is up next with Radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, August 9th, when my guest will be Yan Wang, co-founder of American Marine Research Company, a group of hotshot young engineers, including graduates of Princeton and MIT, who are developing an underwater drone to hunt lionfish and significantly eradicate that population of rampant sort of invasive species. So it's pretty fascinating what they're doing and what they're working on there to attack this problem. Please visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and even better yet, perhaps friend me on Facebook personally and follow me on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests and other information. All that is at TalkingAnimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Community conscious radio, homegrown, handpicked music and news. 5 minutes of NPR headlines are coming up presently, and then Rob Lori and Radioactivity after that. Stay tuned. We'll see you next Wednesday on Talking Animals. Thanks.